stained with the sweat and oils of more men than I cared to think about. No blood, at least. That was something. After belting Loy's curved blade at my waist, I rejoined Braelar on the bench, rather clumsily, unused to armor and weapons. The captain inspected me briefly and nodded curtly. "I don't want you deluding yourself into believing you are fit for combat. You should still hang near the rear and do your best not to attract attention. But those might just save your life when that proves impossible, as it likely will." We crossed some dry gulches and gullies, short grass beneath the horse's hooves, with strange rock formations that seemed to burst out of the harsh landscape like stone fountains, something dreamed up by a drunken sculptor. Larger copper and salmon-colored rock layers seemed precariously balanced on smaller ones, or leaning crazily, but somehow still not falling. Some striated stones formed asymmetrical arches and miniature towers for reasons that perhaps only the rocks understood. Perhaps these were the leftover dreams of mad gods. Had the deserters left these behind as some signal or warning? Our team struggled as we ascended a hill after passing through another ravine. I thought Braelar was going to have to turn us around to find a different route, but we continued climbing and climbing. When we reached the top, I felt my breath catch. The other side of the ridge descended into a small valley, with a god veil winding its way across the floor, warping everything that lay beyond. What I hoped lay beyond. Our options were limited, but if this gamble failed, we would be well and truly trapped, and I had no illusions about Asmorgon sparing me a second time. A padded jacket would certainly not stop his wrath if the captain lost his life on this venture, and I didn't imagine any of his retinue would be especially interested in protecting me a second time. I looked up, and it was as if two disparate skies had been stitched together. Almost directly above and stretching to the west, it was dark blue with fluffy white clouds scattered about, unmoving as if pinned there. To the east, the clouds gathered together, dark gray and dense like wet clay, blocking out the sky and growing darker still, until they were nearly black and then obscured entirely by the warp of the god veil. Those storm clouds didn't seem especially fortuitous. But with the Sildoon, it was hard to gauge. Perhaps a black and heavy sky was actually a good portent. Braelar called a halt, and his retinue rode up alongside us. Vinduro tipped the broad iron brim of his pothelm back.
"Well, plague me, this would be a pretty sight, wouldn't it? That were if that forsaken god veil weren't running right through the middle of it like that, and our enemies weren't closing in to crush us."
Braelar asked Muldus,
"How many miles away are the Aglovians?"
"Main body is a ways out still, a few miles. Their war wagons are keeping them slow, but guessing their scouts are close. Don't have much time."
"Any," Asmorgon amended, towering over everyone.
"Don't have any plaguing time. We're pinned down here, Cap. Pinned. Out to make a break for it, and ride right into the Aglovian bastards right now, before we got no chance at all."
"Your opinion is duly noted, Lieutenant," Braelar replied. He turned to Hughspear.
"And how far back are the Imperials?"
The older lieutenant had a distant look in his eyes, and it took him a moment to realize he'd been asked the question.
"Several miles still, Captain, but they have no wagons, so they will close soon now that we've stopped. We ought to make our play now."
The captain said,
"I'll ride down to the Godvale. This hill is as good a place as any to make a stand. Block as much of the pass with the wagons as you can. We'll be leaving them behind, either way. Unload whatever supplies and provisions are absolutely necessary, and distribute the weight on spare horses. When I return, I'll start leading the men with me, as many as we can manage at a time. We will need to hold this position until we have crossed the company through."
Asmorgon spit a phlegmy mass at a thorny bush.
"And if you fall down dead at the god veil, which seems real plaguing likely, almost a surety, really, what then?"
"Then," Braelar said very slowly, "you will have your foolish charge into overwhelming forces after all, and you can gloat in the afterlife when you see me anon."
The captain jumped off the wagon, his mail and plate harness clinking and slithering, and mounted Scorn. The officers were shouting orders at the men behind us, ordering them into position, and I felt the wagon rock as several climbed in the back and began unloading. Braelar rode next to the bench and turned his helmet in my direction, the Avantail obscuring his face. There was a beat before he said,
"Of all the archivists who have ridden with this company, you annoyed me the least."
He started down the hill, and I called after him, "I'm coming with you." The captain reined up and spun his horse around to face me as I jumped off the wagon and ran to the rear. When I returned on my irascible mount, Braelar said,
"Going to throw yourself into the Vale if this gambit fails?"
"It won't fail," I replied, not entirely believing it. "I'm so confident, in fact, that once you return, I will be the first you lead over, to prove to the others it can be done." Braelar tilted his head slightly, regarding me for a moment. I couldn't read his expression and could barely see his eyes, so I wasn't sure if they were hot with anger, wide with surprise, or implacable as usual.
"Very well," he said. "Let us put your theory to the test."
He rode down the hill, and I nudged my horse to follow. It wasn't nearly as steep as the hill the men had hurtled down at the temple ruins the last time I'd seen the Vale, but I still felt myself clutching my reins tight and leaning back as we descended, trusting my horse not to kill either of us. As the ground leveled out and we closed in on the Godvale, I felt its ceaseless tug, even from 50 yards away. The compulsion to keep going, to approach the Vale, was almost overwhelming. I looked at the captain and asked, "Do you feel it? The draw?" He dismounted, blood sounder in his hand. After a beat, he said,
"I feel nothing."
I swung my leg over and dropped down. "Good. That's a good sign." I didn't have any idea if that was true. It could have been an awful sign. I heard Braelar laugh.
"You really ought not to lie, Arky. Being the most ingenuous creature alive, you truly haven't the slightest skill at it."
"Well," I said, "I hope it's a good sign at least."
"As do I. Now, did the manuscripts describe how this was done with any specificity?"
I was tempted to try to dissemble, but it was pointless. "No, not really. They did all seem to agree that the sentries approached the Vale with weapons in hand. One or two alluded to the fact that the weapon and man were of the same name now. The man who wielded Grieftongue was known as Grieftongue. The man wielding Wrathedge was known..."
"Yes, I think I have it. So did the man say the weapon's name, or..."
"His name as well."
"Did this Grieftongue absurdly say Grieftongue, or announce his presence before entering the Vale?"
"I don't know. The records made no mention of it. But it couldn't hurt."
"Couldn't it? Even if this isn't just the fabrication of legend and someone actually passed through, I could still very well die by failing to know exactly how it was done, yes? So you know of nothing else said or done? No incantations or bizarre gestures? Nothing mentioned at all, besides the twice naming?"
"No," I admitted. "Not that I encountered."
"Very well," he replied, as he started walking forward. "If I should die because you simply didn't translate far enough to learn a magic word, my wrathful wraith will hunt you."
I looked back up the hill and said, "As Morgan would crush my skull right after, so you'd have to hunt in a hurry, Captain Bloodsounder." I forced a laugh, but it felt even hollower than it sounded. The captain walked forward, holding Bloodsounder at his side, the twin chains and deserter godheads swinging alongside his leg, not quite hitting the ground. It was a purposeful stride, as if marching forward to engage a foe, though this one was a millennium old, created by inscrutable gods, and deadly without reprieve. Even if the manuscripts were correct and someone had managed to pass through unmolested, that was centuries ago. What if the gods had changed the locks, as it were? Or whatever latent powers were in weapons like Bloodsounder no longer functioned? What if I had just convinced the man to walk to his death, on nothing more substantial than my powers of translation and interpretation. I nearly rushed forward, shouted for him to stop, but forced myself not to. We had no choice. It was this way, or as Morgan's, and at least this option had the possibility of our surviving. Braelar didn't slow his pace at all. He might have gripped his weapon tighter, might have felt his cold heart beat faster, but none of that showed in his stride, and I respected him enormously for it. Whatever else his faults, he was decisive and brave. I held my breath, praying that Braelar didn't simply crumble into a heap as he closed in on the Godvale. But he did not. He walked straight ahead, slowly raising Bloodsounder as he did, and though it was difficult to tell from that distance, it seemed like the warping bent and shifted faster, and then it wove around him, and he was gone. Well, not truly, his watery silhouette remained, but he must have continued walking, as even that disappeared. I waited. The moments ticked by, and I found myself jogging towards the Godvale before realizing how deadly foolish I was being. I hadn't taken more than 15 steps when the draw turned into a compulsion. I knew I needed to halt, to move back, but all I wanted to do was move closer, to reach out and touch the veil, become part of it, join some small portion of myself to the immeasurable immensity of it. I tried to stop, but my feet carried me forward. And it was so beautiful ahead, the heat wave intensity, the urgent tang of vinegar, the hum and thrum growing, that single final note of a harpist hanging in the air, but now louder, every step, louder. And then there were more notes, overlapping notes, and I raised my hand as I walked, outstretched, wanting to even graze it, and I felt my body respond as I closed in, vibrating as well, as if my very bones shook my flesh and tried to throw it off, as if my skull wanted to slough off my own skin, and it should have terrified me. But it was amazing. Every step brought me closer to something wondrous, miraculous, sublime, and Braelar grabbed my wrist, and suddenly the thousands of thrumming notes were gone, and so was the urge to walk towards total oblivion. There was only the wildly warping Godvale 20 paces in front of me, extending in all directions. I shook my head, but was careful not to pull away from the captain. Was I
about to have your life snuffed out? Yes, I imagine you were very close.
You survived. I mean, of course you did. You're standing here. Unless you are a wrathful wraith. I tried to smile, as it was better than nearly vomiting. What did you see? On the other side, how?
The stolen memories are gone. As to the other, come along. See for yourself. Let's test your second part of your theory and find out, yes?
I nodded once, quickly. Now that I was no longer under the Godvale's spell, I wanted nothing more than to run off in the opposite direction. But I forced myself forward, and then had to keep his pace to avoid him losing his grip on my arm. He stopped right before the veil. If I reached out, I would have touched it. I did not reach out. Braelar turned his face in my direction, his eyes in shadow, his face behind the mail curtain.
Are you ready, archivist?
Yes, I think. He pulled me through, and I gasped. But I didn't feel anything. One moment the pulsing veil was in front of me, and the next, it was simply behind, and directly ahead was terrain exactly like that on the other side, dry, scrubby, russet stones. While the physical details were utterly lacking in drama, I still shouted, "It worked! I told you it would!" My voice broke with relief. Braelar held onto my wrist and led me another 40 paces forward. Then he let go. I resisted the urge to grab him, like a drowning man clutching at debris in the sea. While I felt the tug of the veil behind me, it wasn't irresistible. Aside from being dizzy, there were no after effects at all. He looked down at Bloodsounder and shook his head.
I was sure one of us would die. I've never been more happy to have been proven wrong.
Then he grabbed my wrist tight, and we started back towards the Godvale.
Come,
I have a small army to bring across. Braelar led me back through to the other side, and besides another bout of dizziness and nausea, the small trek did no harm. When we were far enough away from the Godvale that I wouldn't succumb to its song again, he mounted scorn and said,
"A battle half won is no victory at all."
"What does that—" Braelar had mounted scorn and was racing past me up the hill. Glancing up, I saw the jackals looking down at us. Sofjian stood out among them, a slash of scarlet, like a wound. By the time I'd mounted my own horse and scaled the hill, Braelar had already dispatched orders and summoned his officers, who were all on horseback around him. Then the Sildoon began arranging into an orderly column. Their efficiency truly was a marvel. Sometimes disturbing and terrifying, but never less than a marvel. Braelar and his retinue were off to one side, out of earshot. As usual, it sounded as if there were an argument brewing. Q-Spear had his slashing spear across his saddle.
"The scouts reported their outriders close. We are running out of time. There are surely other routes into this little valley, but most are goat trails that are nearly impassable to horse. They will come this way."
Muldus nodded vigorously.
"Aye, time's slipping quick now, and it will take some time to get the boys through. How many did you say you could take at a time, Cap? 5? 10 maybe?"
Braelar nodded. Aki confirmed a handful. "We will try to exceed that, of course. I suspect if someone isn't protected in the chain, we will know immediately without losing life." Sofjian had the hint of a smile on her face. "Well met, Bloodsounder. You are shorter than expected." Vindoro was looking down the hill at the Godvale.
"Still can't believe you made it, Cap. The both of you. I mean, I watched it, my own two eyes and everything, but still hard to fathom. What did it feel like? It was—"
"You shall know very shortly. Our primary concern is making sure the Imperials do not run us to ground before we are through. Fire alone won't do." Vindoro replied,
"I could throw some caltrops down. Sure, they won't come riding over them like idiot horn fuckers, but even taking time to clean them up will slow them some."
Muldus nodded.
"Couldn't hurt. See to it, Sergeant."
Vindoro rode off and tasked a few men with returning to the wagons with him. Rumbling as usual, as Morgan said,
"All hang back, Cap. Need 20 or so men. Rear guard. Hold the pass. Prick any of those pricks if they try to close. Keep them at bay until you clear out of here. Light the wagons behind us. Sound good?"
Hugh Spear interjected before the captain had a chance to respond.
"It is a sound plan, but, and I do hate to pull seniority, but it should be me who commands the men."
As Morgan leaned forward in his saddle, his lamellar clattering.
"Jealous of anyone stealing your glory, you old wrinkled twat, that it?"
"Mind your tongue, Ogre,"
Muldu said. The stout lieutenant's normal intimidation tactics were lost on the giant, who laughed.
"Or what, mushrooms?"
Braelar clapped his hands together.
"Enough. I am heading down to start leading troops over. As Morgan, Sofjian, accompany me. The men need protection on the other side."
Sofjian said, "Brother, I can do more at the rear guard here to protect your men. You—"
"We have no idea what truly awaits us on the other side of that cursed veil. You will go in the initial group."
He turned to his other lieutenants.
"Muldus, Hughspear, hold the line here at the base. When it's clear the majority are safe on the other side, light the wagons and ride hard to join us."
Then he turned to me.
"Your supplies are likely still in the wagon. Get your gear and then meet me at the base, yes?"
I nodded. "And the manuscripts?"
"The men spread out the remaining scrolls and parchments among the horses already. The pages you translated will be burnt."
"Burnt?" He threw his hands in the air.
"Why is it no one understands how fire seems to work? Yes, Arky, we ensure it doesn't fall into the Emperor's hands, in case his researchers see something in them you missed."
"I missed nothing."
"Very good. Then you won't cry when they are burnt."
Then he turned and started riding down the hill. He might have been wrong about the crying. It seemed a tragic waste, all the ancient knowledge and records turned to ash and lost to the wind. But it couldn't be helped. Still, it ran counter to everything I had spent my life doing, compiling, recording, and now translating accounts intended to be read and read again. Shaking my head, I earned a curse from a passing Sildoon as I rode too close, and his horse snapped at mine as well. I moved away, leaned over my horse's neck, and apologized for being a poor rider, and then we headed towards the wagons. They were positioned front to end across the pass to block as much of it as they could. The Sildoon had stripped the wagons of most of the necessary supplies and tools they could carry, with only a few soldiers checking the remains to be sure nothing vital was left behind before dousing most of them in oil. Venduro was heading back with a handful of soldiers he had taken to spread the caltrops across the trail further up. He said,
"Got to say, Arky, maddest plaguing thing in the world crossing the God Vale. Like thumbing your noses at the gods, ain't it?"
He shook his head, a melancholy smile on his face.
"Wish Gless could have seen this. He would have shit himself."
Then he laughed and kept riding. Rudgy was rolling a barrel of oil past and looked up at me.
"Best get done whatever it is you're doing here, scribe. We've got orders to get these alight right quick. Unless you want to stand around and scribble something down for posterity. Then by all means hang back, watch the wagons burn. Maybe take a plaguing nap."
"Posterity can wait," I said, as I dismounted and then climbed up onto the captain's abandoned wagon. The interior looked well and truly looted, the bed littered with nails, a half-empty sack, and a trail of grain from the hole torn in the canvas. The crate that had contained the scrolls I hadn't gotten to was thrown open and completely empty. It was truly sad that this wagon felt like more of a home than any city I'd visited or even lived in. But there was no denying the pang of loss I suddenly felt. It was nothing but wood and canvas, cramped and uncomfortable, filled with stenches known and mysterious, and generally sweltering, but I was loath to leave it. I sighed and grabbed my brass riding case from the corner of the wagon, slipped the strap over my helm and shoulder, and started towards the front again. I stepped onto the bench when I heard hooves. A galloping horse. A Sildoon sped past, riding hard, and headed down the hill towards the Godvale. Rudgy ran up to the wagon and ordered me out.
"Get down there with the others, Arky. Burning time."
The Imperials were upon us.
Chapter 9. I rode down the hill as quickly as I could, but not so fast I risked breaking my horse's legs or flying off to break mine. It was difficult to get a head count, but the captain had led about half the company across, maybe less. He must have been ready to guide another group across when the scout reined up and reported, as now he seemed to be trying to settle a dispute between Hughspear and Muldus. I dismounted and ran up as Muldus finished a thought as only he could.
"And there's an end to it, you plaguing walnut. No way you stay behind. Wagons are on fire, so make a stand here until Cap gets the boys through, and that's it."
Hughspear shook his head.
"Even if the Aglovians and Imperials failed to realize that we were transporting troops through, they outnumber us 2 or even 3 to 1, and they'll have the added range up on that hill. They'll shoot us to pieces. You know they will. And once they do see what we're up to, they'll likely come storming down that hill and destroy us to a man."
"Let them try," Muldus said.
Hughspear said, "Captain, you can only take, what, 10 men at a time, correct?"
Braelar nodded.
"We tried 11 and nearly lost a man. The number is 10.
"And you have to lead them far enough in that they don't run right back into the Godvale, meaning we wouldn't have the numbers to withstand them at full strength, which is why we tried this gambit in the first place. But with most of the men through, the remainder will be slaughtered. You know this, Mull. Our best chance is to hold the pass on the higher ground with a small group. 20 ought to do. That will ensure the rest of the men get through."
Muldus shook his head.
"You ain't staying behind."
Hughspear countered.
"It has to be an officer, as Morgan is through already, and it obviously can't be the captain."
"Me, then."
"Or me,"
Venduro said as he approached. Hughspear replied,
"Ven, you are able enough, and this is no aspersion, but you are only a sergeant."
He turned to Muldus.
"And it pains me to say it, but in your current condition, you aren't the best choice either. It will be me.
Bite my hairy jewels, you old bastard. With your ribs stove in and your skull rattled by Memridon bitches, you're in no better shape.
I am. And what's more, I am your elder.
Muldus pulled his helmet off his saddle and worked the Aventail out before slipping it on his head.
There's dirt plaguing younger than you, but I'm leading the men.
Hughspear appealed to Braelar.
We are running out of time, Captain. Quickly, reason with the stubborn fool, or I'll hit him in the head with my mace, and you can drag him through the God Vale.
The captain was staring up the hill. Black smoke was coiling up slowly, hardly bothered by a draft.
That won't deter anyone for long. Hugh is correct. Time is short. And you can't both go.
Muldus stalked up to him.
I've got it covered, Cap.
Braelar looked at both his lieutenants for several moments, but it was impossible to gauge his expression behind the mail. Then he said,
Hugh, take 20 men. Hold the pass for as long as you can. Once I get the last of the lads through, break for the Vale. I will come back and guide you through.
Hughspear nodded slowly. He shifted his slashing spear in front of him.
Aye, Cap. We will hold.
Braelar clapped him on the shoulder.
Very good. Now go.
Muldus started to object again, slurring his words more than usual with rage, and Braelar grabbed his arm and leaned in close to say something I couldn't hear. Muldus continued shaking his head, but less vehemently. Hughspear propped his slashing spear on his shoulder and then walked forward to address the remaining Saldoon.
The Imperials are nearly upon us. I'm going back up that hill to keep them at bay long enough for our brothers to make it through. I need 20 lads to accompany me. Who will it be?
It took only a moment, and then dozens and dozens of hands sprang up closest to the lieutenant, and those gave rise to others, rippling back away from Hughspear until the entire assembly had volunteered. Hughspear said,
I see you bastards are going to make this difficult, then.
He smiled.
I expected nothing less. Very well. You five, he pointed at a group,
and then another.
And you five there. And you brave lads there.
He looked up the hill and into the sky.
Follow me. The rain's held off. It's still a fine day for crossbows. Let's go fill some leopards with bolts, shall we?
The men cheered as Hughspear walked back to his horse. Braelar saluted him from atop Scorn, and then rode to the group of the soldiers waiting to cross next. I watched men clasp his wrists on either side as he held Bloodsounder aloft, and then men clasping wrists down the line until 10 were in a row and moving into the God Vale. Turning back to the officers, I saw Hughspear pat Finduro on the shoulder twice. The younger man nodded, and then headed to his horse. Muldus was slumping more than usual in the saddle as he looked at Hughspear.
Never met a man more stubborn than you.
That's only due to the shortage of mirrors, which in your case is a good thing.
Plaguing old goat.
Plaguing boar son.
The pair laughed, and Muldus said,
Don't dawdle on the hill any longer than you have to, you wizened bastard.
Hughspear shook his spear.
You must have mistaken this for a walking stick.
Then he called out to the 20 he selected.
Let's ride, jackals.
The Sildoon started up the hill, and halfway they passed Rudgy and the few soldiers who'd stayed to light the wagons ablaze, riding down the hill. A few words were exchanged. Rudgy saluted Hughspear, and then both groups continued on. I stood there watching Hughspear and his 20 go, once again amazed at the depth of that brotherhood. They were all riding up to face a much larger force, and they did so not only willingly, but with jokes on their lips and defiance in their hearts. Hughspear's group crested the hill and rode out of view, no doubt taking up position behind the burning blockade. I turned to see if Muldus was there, but he had disappeared into the throng of soldiers in front of the God Vale, though I still heard him bellowing orders and curses. Braelar returned again, rode up to the line of soldiers, and repeated the steps in lining up a new group of 10.
A few times a horse balked and tried to turn from the course, but the Sildoon, being expert riders, managed to maintain control. Each passage to the other side seemed to take an eternity. There were about 50 soldiers left when I heard a distant scream up the hill. I looked over my shoulder, but there was nothing to see. The top of the hill was empty. The Imperials likely thought us trapped, so I hoped they were content to sit back and exchange bolts and arrows in the pass, rather than risking a charge against burning wagons and who knew how many men holding the position. As Braelar led another group of 10 through, I thought the strategy might just work, and Hughspear and his men would have a chance to rejoin us after all. But then I saw them on top of the dusty rise, on horseback, slowly retreating as they loosed bolts and then moved aside to span their crossbows as more Sildoon took aim. Sort of a reverse of the rolling gears they'd employed against the Hornmen after we had captured Henlester. Only the Imperials had far more composite bows, and even in the crowded pass, they could still shoot them in ranks, arcing them high into the sky, and as they proved in Crossthatch, much more rapidly. A barrage rained down, and while the jackal armor protected a good number of them, deflecting arrows, saving lives, some horses were struck and took their riders down, and some riders fell from the saddle, having sustained grievous wounds from arrows that found unarmored spots. One Sildoon with an arrow in his neck rolled down the hill, snapping the shaft and kicking up a cloud of dust before coming to a stop. The jackals retreated further, loosing what bolts they could, but another barrage of arrows came down, black shafts pinning men and beast, depleting their numbers, with those that missed the mark landing halfway down the hill. I looked over my shoulder quickly, seeing Braelar lead another group through, and silently urged them to hurry. The tall lieutenant waved his hands, and his men fell back, shooting once more before coming down the hill 10 or 20 paces, safe from direct assault for a moment. Arrows filled the sky again, but they overshot the Sildoon and landed harmlessly in the scrub on the hill. The jackals worked their devil's claws and spanned crossbows again, just as the first infantry appeared over the lip of the hill, their scale armor and helms shining in what remained of the sun, the dark clouds having wiped most of the blue away now. Hughspear and his men loosed their bolts, and the infantry loosed their arrows, and men fell on both sides. The infantry were drawing more arrows from the quivers at their hips when the remaining Sildoon at the bottom of the hill loosed their own crossbows. Many in the first wave of infantry were struck by bolts and wounded, several falling to the ground, but those that remained pulled their shields off their backs and stepped forward, allowing more infantry to file onto the hill. Those in front had the long shields up, covering most targets, and those behind began shooting arrows with impunity at both the jackals midway down the hill and us at the bottom. One arrow flew close enough to my head that it sounded like an angry wasp buzzing by. I instinctively ducked, though the only meager cover I had was my horse's neck. Braelar was leading another group through, and one soldier's horse was struck in the flank by an arrow. The animal reared, and the Sildoon lost his grip on the men on either side. He fell to the ground, clutching his head, rolling as if he were on fire, and then falling still. And the man to his right at the end of the line thrashed twice with no tether to Braelar before falling dead from the saddle as well. The captain and the others parted the Godvale and disappeared from sight. There were still more than 10 men left on this side. I'd never wished there were another Bloodsounder around, but I did now. I looked back up the hill as I spanned my crossbow, expecting to see Hughspear and his remaining men galloping down to join us now that they lost the hill. But instead, they dropped their crossbows and pulled their swords and maces and axes, and one slashing spear, and charged up into the three lines of infantry who'd taken up position protecting the archers. The Imperials had their shields, but weren't expecting the small number of men to charge, and didn't have their long spears at the ready. If they had, they would have pierced every jackal galloping up the hill at them, or broken the charge completely. As it was, some of them were drawing their own sidearms when the jackals burst into their line, blades flashing and falling, cutting, slashing, crushing,
The front lines were in complete disarray, several injured not only by steel, but by the hooves and mouths of the horses suddenly among them. But more infantry poured over the crest of the hill. Hughspear bought us time, as Braelar led the second-to-last group through. But the infantry kept coming in waves. The lieutenant slashed and stabbed, cutting down men on all sides, spinning his mount as they flanked him, his slashing spear thrusting and arcing around him. His horse kicked out, likely crushing the skull of a man who didn't even scream before falling to the earth. But even with his horse and the bloodied head of his blade whirling everywhere, one of the soldiers rushed in and grabbed Hughspear. The lieutenant struck the soldier in the face with a haft, slashed him across the neck as he fell back. But that Erglovian was replaced by five more, and they pulled Hughspear from the saddle. I sighted down my stock and squeezed the trigger, hitting a nearby Erglovian spearman, hoping against hope that they might only capture Hughspear. But weapons rose and fell, bloodier and bloodier, and then stopped as the infantry formed up to attack the other remaining jackals. I felt a hand on my shoulder and nearly swung out with a crossbow. Vinduro's eyes were locked on the final jackals on the hill who were cut down to a man. Not one of them tried to run, to escape. They stayed. They fought. They died. Vinduro said, "Come on, Aki, out of time." I blinked several times. The captain was about to lead the last of us through. I nudged my horse forward, furious, helpless, and joined him at the end of the last line Braelar was leading through, grabbing the sergeant's wrist. Several arrows fell around us as we rode forward. I was waiting to feel an arrow pierce my back or for my horse to buck and throw me as we approached the Godvale, resisting the urge to look back up the hill. And then we were through. I saw that the remaining company had ridden several hundred yards away, which was smart, as the Erglovians continued to shoot at us, even after we disappeared. Muldus was the only one who was waiting for us right on the other side.
"Hugh, the rest?"
Vinduro shook his head once as he released my wrist. We all started forward to get out of bowshot. All save Muldus. As I passed him, I heard him say to himself, a slurry growl,
"Every last leopard, killing every last plaguing one."
Just then, I believed him wholly, and silently pledged to help him in whatever way I could. Muldus jerked on his reins and spun his horse around and raced towards the company, as another hail of arrows fell all around him. Chapter 10. We rode away from the Godvale in utter silence, out of range of even the closest archer on the other side, as shafts fell in our wake, until they stopped falling altogether. It wasn't unlike the mood that pervaded after we fled Sunrak. Crypt silence filled with futile thoughts of murder hanging heavy in the air. The thrum of the Godvale disappeared behind, and then there was only the clop of hooves, the creak of leather, and the occasional jingle of harnesses or cuirasses nearby. A number of jackals had lost their lives as we escaped, and there was absolutely nothing anyone could do to avenge them just now. It was awful watching the jackals fall on the bridge at Sunrak, but doubly so watching Hughspear get cut down. I didn't know the man nearly as well as Vinduro, Muldus, or Braelar had, but I respected him. Even broken and ailing inside, and older than any of the jackals among us, Hughspear was twice the man of almost anyone else in the company. And he always dealt with me fairly. There was a nobility there, too, and a graciousness. While Hughspear could be firm, unyielding even, I thought back to his words about exiling his daughter-in-law, if that's what it took to secure a place in his grandson's life. He was gentle and kind as well. And less rash or driven by his appetites than most men. Especially Muldus. I shuddered to think how his comrade was going to deal with the loss, and kept picturing Muldus dying as well, over and over, as he tried to avenge his fallen brother. I shook my head, feeling a hollowness that refused to give way to pure sadness, at least so far. I tried to hold out hope, to convince myself maybe the lieutenant had only been badly wounded and captured rather than killed. But I have had no better success lying to myself than anyone else. Even if no one spoke, Sildoon frequently looked around uneasily, as if expecting monsters or the gods themselves to suddenly swoop down on us. And the scouts Braelar sent ahead seemed a little more reticent than usual. We obviously ventured somewhere humans weren't intended to go, but at least we'd done so with a large, if depleted, armed force. That was some minor comfort. The terrain was identical to what we left behind on the other side, which shouldn't have been shocking, but somehow was. It felt alien, even if there wasn't anything visible to indicate it was. Between the muzzled rage and the anxiety, there was a horrible sense of tension and foreboding in the company that I was sure wasn't mine alone. We rode for another hour and then stopped as the black clouds finally opened up. As they had outside Sunrak, the Sildoon conducted their duties without complaint, but also without any hint or merriment, revelry, or even crude barbs and asides. I'm sure many had been close with the 20 who had just died to save our lives, or the few who didn't survive the crossing. I wondered if they wished that Hughspear had selected them, so they would be spared the guilt and remorse they surely felt. While I was no soldier, it was a terrible thing to witness men sacrificing themselves for your behalf, even if they had accepted the charge willingly. I did what I could to help, caring for and feeding the horses, but it was small distraction and no balm at all. By the time camp was set up, such as it was, the rain finally subsided, though clouds remained, blocking out the stars and moon completely. Braelar took up residence away from the rest of the company, and his small retinue was sitting in a circle around the fire he prepared. I was a bit surprised, partly that he had found anything dry enough to light, but also assuming he didn't want to attract the attention of whatever might roam this side of the Godvale. But maybe the captain was itching for a fight, or the chance to confront his makers and accuse them of being the uncaring and hateful deities they were. I wasn't sure how much wine or ale was left, or when we might see more of it, but they all seemed to be drinking freely. After seeing who sat where, I took a spot between Sofjian and Vinduro. Rudgy, Muldus, and Asmorgon were on either side of the captain. No one was in a hurry to speak. Finally, Vinduro said,
"What's the plan then, Cap? How far are you going in here? And will we still be heading northish?"
Braelar didn't respond right away, staring into the sputtering flames. No one pressed him, and the silence stretched on so long, I thought maybe I imagined the question being asked at all. Then the captain replied,
"I do not know."
Vinduro looked around the group, scratched at the tuft of hair on his chin, and when no one else thought to reply, said,
"I know it's about time, so don't mean to press, but, well, we've gone to somewhere nobody ever imagined they'd ever see, me included, and the boys, well, they'll be wondering what you have in store, Cap."
"Will they?" Braelar asked, both syllables over-enunciated, weighted with dire consequence.
Vinduro nodded, but said no more. The captain took his eyes away from the small fire and said,
"I will announce our intentions on the morrow. The men will simply have to try to sleep without knowing them in full."
After another long silence, Asmorgon shifted his immense weight on a damp log and said,
"Probably no good time for this neither, but who do you have in mind to promote? To lieutenant, that is. I got some good boys who—"
Muldus drew his Soroka.
"That's the beauty of a blade. It don't care what neck it slices across. Giants bleed no slower than runts. Just a lot more."
As Morgan's laugh sounded like two stones being rubbed together.
"I know you two are close, but Squirrel there is right.
Cap's got to think about practicalities now. So it might hurt to hear, but we got to consider.
If you open your giant mouth again without showing the dead the proper respect, I swear I'll drive this through your jaw and shut it myself.
As Morgan leaned forward,
Hugh died saving us. Good man. Fool of a man, too, same as you all. I told you we shouldn't have headed for the God Vale. It was a fool notion, and I was against it from the start. And if you had to leave someone for rear guard, should have been me, like I done told you, but—
Muldoo sprang off his rock with surprising speed, and had the point of the Soroka pressed to Asmorgon's neck before the huge man could do anything to stop him.
Shut your plaguing mouth. You hear me, Ogre? Shut it. I lost my best friend just now, so you want to try your luck? You make a move or say one more plaguing disrespectful word and see if I don't ram this into your skull and watch the gallons of blood leak out. You hear me, you whopping huge horse fucker?
Vindoro and Rudgy had their swords halfway out, and Softchin had a dangerous focus on her face. Braelar stood and walked over to the lieutenants.
Asmorgon, you are right on one count. The men need to see their leaders acting decisively, especially in a time of crisis and chaos. From this moment forward, Vindoro is the company's newest lieutenant. If you have any suggestions for nominating a new sergeant to fill his vacancy, I will hear it on the morrow. Because Muldoos is also right. We lost one of our best today, along with more than 20 other good men, and a failure to afford them the proper respect will incur my wrath no less than the man with a blade to your throat just now. So I suggest you follow the good advice you just received and shut your mouth before someone really loses their temper and things end badly. I cannot afford to lose any more lieutenants today. I have made myself clear, yes?
As Morgan hadn't flinched away from the blade, his eyes locked with Muldoos's, and he was weighing something for several tense moments before replying.
Aye, Cap. All clear.
Muldoos slowly lowered the blade and took his place in front of the dying fire again. As Morgan reached up, touched his jaw, fingers coming away with some spots of blood. Apparently his immense pelt of a beard offered little added protection. The ogre got to his feet, looking larger than ever, and he stared down at Muldoos. The pale boar ignored him, and Asmorgon walked off into the dark. When he was gone, Rudgy laughed quietly.
Good thing nobody really lost their temper, eh?
Vindoro looked at Braelar and seemed miserable.
Cap, what you said, it's...
Overdue. Hugh Spear was intending to retire soon, before Sinead played out his most recent coup and forced us to the road. Did you imagine we kept you close simply because we craved your wit and company?
The younger man shook his head slowly.
No, Cap, but...
You were being groomed for the position. You simply find yourself in it a little earlier than expected. It is done. Congratulations, Lieutenant.
Vindoro nodded, and it was the most sorrowful promotion I'd ever seen. He didn't bother wiping away the tears that fell down his cheeks, or pretend ash had flown into his eyes.
Aye, Cap.
He took a long swig from his costrel. Rudgy leaned over to Vindoro and said quietly,
Timing is lousier than lice, but good on you, Lieutenant. You deserve it.
Vindoro gave one quick nod, tried to respond, then stopped himself. The group lapsed into silence again, eyes lost in the shrinking flames once more. Braelar said,
We have spoken at length about what constitutes a bad death, a good death. I have seen many men die. In my charge and by my hand. Too many of both, truly. But today a hero died. Many, in fact. But we would have lost half our company or more if it hadn't been for Hugh Spear. He had ever been stalwart, courageous and true, an exemplary soldier and leader. And I've spent most of my life chiding myself for not living up to his example. Was his a good death, saving so many? I do not know. I no longer pretend to know. But he was one of the finest officers to ever have the honor of calling himself Sildoon. And one of the finest men I've ever had the pleasure of calling friend. That much I know for a certainty.
He slowly hoisted his costrel and said,
"To Hugh Spear," before taking a drink. Then he passed it to Muldoose, who did the same. Voice cracking, he said,
"To Hugh Spear,"
before tipping it up. Muldoose handed the costrel to the new lieutenant. Vinduro's eyes were wet as he said,
"To Hugh Spear."
After taking his drink, he held it out for me. I started to reach for it, but stopped short.
I'm not a Sildoon,
Muldoose said.
"You don't drink to his honor, you skinny whelp, and—"
I accepted the costrel, said, "To Hugh Spear," and took a swallow of bitter wine. Tears started to well up, and I looked at Sofchian, then back to Braelar and Muldoose. Braelar gave a short nod, and while Muldoose glowered, he said nothing, so I handed the flask to Sofchian.
"To Hugh Spear," she said,
taking her drink before getting halfway up to hand it over the fire to Rudgie. The short sergeant accepted it and completed the ritual with the repeated toast and drink. We sat in silence again after that, as there was nothing left to say as we watched the fire until it was dead and gone.
Chapter 11. The next morning, the company continued heading north, not straying too far from the Godvale. I rode near the front of the column, behind Braelar and his men. I suspected this always irked the other soldiers, but Braelar commanded it. And what's more, I enjoyed not choking on the dust kicked up by over 100 horses. The first day was mostly uneventful. Every time I climbed out of the saddle, stiff and aching and with new blisters, I tried to find time to continue translating, but I had little energy for it. A somber mood still held sway over the company, so I was in no hurry to trouble anyone and kept to myself. That wasn't true of everyone. I was walking back from the most secluded spot I could find to relieve myself when Sofchian startled me.
"Pity, isn't it?"
Having nearly jumped out of my skin, I replied.
"What is exactly? I can think of many things that would fall in that category just now."
She gave a small, rueful smile.
"Very true, but just now," she looked off to the east, away from the Godvale. "I was thinking that this is the first time in half a millennium or more that humans have ventured on this side of the Godvale, and assuredly the first time ever in force like this. So it strikes me that it is a true pity your captain is pressing so hard driving north."
"What would you have him do?" I asked. "Deviate from his mission to go exploring in the wild?" She laughed, brief, almost a bark.
"Oh, that wouldn't exactly be out of character, now would it? I know he is tempted. He must be."
She pointed east.
"We have no idea what lies out there. None. It is the greatest mystery to ever befuddle mankind. Where are the gods? Why did they truly leave? Was it really profound disappointment in us? That seems bad form as hosts, doesn't it?"
I looked east as well and admitted, "I would love to know, to explore. It is a terrifying thought, but also an exhilarating one. And maybe it's a pity it isn't possible." "But it isn't, is it?" She faced me again.
"Possibilities are more water than stone, wouldn't you agree?"
"Maybe to a Memrodon. To the rest of us mundane folk, burdened as we are by expectations and limitations, things are not so fluid." Sofchian cocked her head to the side.
"I can't decide if that is flattery or insult, but either way, I would suggest you are the one limiting yourself here."
"Oh?" I asked,
intrigued despite myself. How so?
My brother dismisses input as often as not, but I know he values yours.
I started to object, but she continued. I would have no chance at all convincing him to head east a bit, to deviate slightly to see what we see, and would be shouted down by the rest even if he was inclined to listen. But you might not fare so poorly. I shook my head. You know your brother better than most, I warned. He has a mind for vengeance now, as does the whole company. They want to reunite with Thumar and then bloody the Emperor as soon as possible. He won't listen to me on that point, even if he believes it a pity as well. Her face hardened to stony impossibility.
Vengeance, is it? He ought to be very careful then. While Bray has undeniable intelligence, when it comes to matters of orchestrating vengeance, his skills leave something to be desired.
She turned to leave, and I blurted out, That seems a bit harsh. He was a boy still, and at least he tried, didn't he? Sofjian looked over her shoulder.
Tried? Oh, yes, he did. And in truth, I advised him, mapped out almost the entire plan, really, so I was equally inept at vengeance. At least when it came to my father. I have improved considerably since then.
Then she walked away.
The next day proved much like the last, only I was more sore and uncomfortable. It was largely uneventful as well, with the only real exception occurring when we stopped to rest the horses in the afternoon. I was walking away from the company, trying to find a good rocky outcrop to offer some shade, as the sun was beating down and reflecting off the parchment, and giving me an awful headache. Muldu saw me and altered his course to intercept. I considered pretending I hadn't noticed and continuing a touch faster, hoping he would think it too much work to cut me off. But it was pointless, and would likely result in an uglier dressing down or encounter than it otherwise would have been. So I stopped. Muldus had that odd hitch to his step, as his left arm and leg both seemed reluctant to cooperate most of the time. When he caught up, the pale boar stood in front of me, looked me up and down, and said,
Put those plaguing pages in case down, Scribbler.
I was instantly nervous. The pages? But—
Yes, you leprous Boyle, the plaguing pages.
I thought about reminding him that the captain had tasked me with that job, but knew that wasn't likely to help the situation resolve without me getting elbowed in the gut. So did as he commanded, setting the case on top to keep the pages from fluttering away. Muldu said,
You'll never be a soldier, never even be halfway competent. Oblivious to everybody, ain't it? But if you're going to go around dressing the part, you better pick up a few things to avoid getting that helm all dented up, or that gambeson skewered and bloody. You ready?
I was a little dumbfounded. I always assumed if anyone would tutor me at all, it would be Vindoro. I was afraid to ask, really, as I knew I would be a target for mockery if I even attempted to swing a blade. Did Captain Kilcoyne,
What? Ask me to take you under my wing and regurgitate martial knowledge into your tiny little beak like a maternal mother bird? No, he plaguing didn't. But he's got a use for you, and it's miracle of miracles you ain't been killed already. And I figure, since you keep on throwing yourself in harm's way, you best do it with at least some small chance of survival. If you got to die, at least look good doing it. So, asking again, you plaguing ready, Scribbler?
I looked at him, face flushed, one eyelid drooping, half his face slack, posture torqued. Maybe he needed this as much as I did. I nodded, and Muldus did as well. When I started to draw Loy's blade, his hand shot out and clamped around my wrist.
Whoa there! Who said anything about you wielding steel, you over-eager bastard? Nobody, that's who. Plague me, but you're in a hurry to get yourself killed.
I thought...
Well, knock that shit off straight away. Obey orders. That's all you got to do here. Think you can manage that?
I straightened and nodded, wishing he hadn't seen me at all.
Right then. First thing, If you're going to get into a scrap sometime, you'll be needing something in the other hand.
He pulled the buckler off his belt and handed it to me. It was steel, with the handle wrapped in stained leather.